Next case is 96-1386, State of Ohio versus Tina Selvage. Mr. Catchmer.
Good morning, my name is George Catchmer, representing the State of Ohio. I would like to reserve about 2 minutes to rebuttal if I might. Your Honor, as a preliminary matter, this is a pre-indictment late case in which no evidence of actual prejudice was presented. However, the reason we're standing here is because the trial court in the Court of Appeals in State versus Peter, which was, of course, severely limited, as a floor to allow in a post-indictment delay marker analysis in a pre-indictment delay case. And I think that since Meeker has not been overruled, this may very well occur. So I think this is right for this sort of analysis.
Mr. Catchmer, I got the impression from your brief that you were urging that if a state has adopted a speedy trial statute or statute of limitations, that satisfies the constitutional requirement.
That's correct to a point, Your Honor.
To a point, because what if a state adopts a statute that says the statute of limitations is 25 years? Constitutional?
Your Honor,
we can't possibly adopt that, can we, as a rule of law? Should we?
No, of course not. Okay. However, having said that, we do rely on the legislature to make reasonable presumptions. And this brings me to the heart of our case, which is the Packard case. In Barker, the Supreme Court stated that they were not going to adopt hard and fast time periods. However, on page 523 of the U.S. Report, 2188 of the Supreme Court Report, they state that they will allow the states themselves to make their own presumptions and their own timelines. This is also, this view of Barker is also taken by Judge Fink from our Second District Court of Appeals in Hoover. He says the same thing, and he talks about statutes of limitations. But, Your Honor, as Mr. Cicero rightly points out, just to bring a case within the statute of limitations is not what we're talking about. It's the truism. If you don't, you can't bring the case. What we are talking about, and what Doggett raises and does not answer, what Barker is the question of arbitrary periods of time and the presumptions that accompany them. The question is,
what's arbitrary when you say arbitrary periods of time? Are you referring to the statute of limitations?
I'll tie this in.
Okay.
Barker says it's a triggering mechanism until there is such time by itself, the passage of time by itself, raises to a point where it would be unfair to present a case, we do not trigger a Barker analysis. Now that we're talking about the passage of time itself without any other factors, because there is no actual prejudice.
Is that issue a matter of judgment? Because the trial court here clearly found that 13 and 10 months respectively was in fact too long. Should we substitute our judgment for that of the trial court?
I think it already has been done so, Your Honor, and again, I think this comes out of the Packard case. What Packard stated, and the reason there is, we don't have to guess the shelf life of a certain type of case. We don't have to guess or arbitrarily decide, is 13 months enough, is 7 months enough, is 22 months enough. We have already spoken in Ohio. We have spoken in the time periods in our statutes of limitations, not the statutes of limitations themselves, but the presumptions, the temporal presumptions contained in those statutes of limitations, give us the shelf life of the case.
Let's say that we accept that proposition that that's the shelf life of the case and that we'll presumptive prejudice concern. In this case, First of all, in this case, it seems that the court, although the court was, the trial court was talking about presumptive prejudice, here, this court went beyond that and found actual prejudice with this particular defendant. The words and the actual factual statement the court makes that she, this particular Tina Selvidge, forgot and doesn't remember the event. Are we in a presumptive prejudice case?
Yes, we are, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. We are in a presumptive prejudice case because there was no evidence presented of actual prejudice. She never testified. Nobody testified to the defense other than the two officers. And if the opinion of the judge
Say that's an unsupported finding, that's something else. I don't see that as a propositional law here today.
Your Honor, that's the opinion of Judge Kessler. Uses language, I believe, out of Meeker and out of pre-Marion cases to say that possibly, and in the previous, this is how he states, possibly she could have forgotten. Where he gets that, there is language in Barker, in Dogg, that says this is something that could possibly happen. It's not that it did happen, and therefore we're going to presume. Again, you don't even get to that analysis if you don't get through the presumption. In other words, to even do that is to jump ahead. In Barker, and we quoted it in our brief, if you do not have that presumptive period of prejudice, time alone, it is improper to go beyond that.
Oh, we're going to get objective.
Excuse me?
It's got to be objective. The presumptive period of time is an objective standard.
That's correct. That's what we're raising.
And yet, the
I think I can go where you're going with this, Your Honor. I think what might be in the back of your mind is, suppose that's true. What if a witness dies or something happens in this period of time? The state has 6 years. Then what happens if you go to a Marion, Lovasco, due process analysis? That's when you start bringing in actual prejudice. If the defendant can show that, then you have a due process analysis.
You rebut the presumption.
Exactly. Because due process is always open in cases of actual prejudice. But what we have here is a case where there was no showing of actual prejudice. And again, reading Judge Kessler's opinion, you will see that actually what he does is he works in language out of Doggett, I believe, and he takes a couple of lines from the defendant's motion, but there was never any evidence presented of this. This is purely presumptive. And Barker says, without the presumption, we don't go to the
assuming you're right, there is no evidence. If it reads like a finding, which, I mean, you're saying he couldn't mean that as a finding because it would be unsupported in the record.
That's correct.
And yet, if it does read as a factual finding, albeit unsupported, where are you? You have a limited proposition for us.
Yes, that's true, Your Honor.
Very limited, but we can accept this as the essential limitations as the standard for presumptive prejudice.
I guess my question to Your Honor is, if he said that Tina Selvidge always wore water wings, and he made that finding, would that preclude me from bringing this argument? It's something that can't be supported by the record, and not just that.
You say it's irrelevant because you have to meet that presumptive
that's
standard.
That's correct. Exactly. That the procedure was incorrect.
It seems to me your argument is circular, but maybe that's because I don't understand it. You start here, when you get around, you say, okay, we're here, but we really don't mean to be here. You argue 2901.13 as your basis. That's a 6-year statute of limitation.
That's correct.
But you say that there shouldn't be a definite timeline.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that, Your Honor.
You're not? Well, then how do you argue around Barker and Doggett?
Very simple. Barker says that Barker says that while they will be flexible, the states are allowed to make their own periods of time. It does say that.
It cannot be unreasonable.
That's correct.
And so your argument is 2901.13, 6 years, is not unreasonable to hold somebody in limbo with regard to an indictment.
Well, the purpose is,
that's scary.
No, Your Honor, let me ask you.
To me.
What is the statute of limitations?
In this case, it's for trying a felony.
That's correct. It is a collection of presumptions, temporal presumptions, where the legislature has spoken and said, with the passage of time alone, how long will a case last before it is unfair to make somebody present? Now, in all honesty...
You want to establish that at 6 years?
Yes, and the legislature established that.
So what you're telling us is if we adopt what you're arguing, that every case can be held open at least 6 years, every felony case.
I'm not. I'm saying that under the Sixth Amendment...
That's why I think it's circular, see, because I don't understand where you stop. Because if you cite 2901.13, that's got to be the rule.
Under a Sixth Amendment challenge, because that's where you have to have a presumptive predicate. No forgetting. It's based simply on the passage of time. That's where you have to have a presumptive predicate. But the defendant is not left without recourse. If there is actual prejudice, he can still go and initiate a Marion-Lobosco-type due process argument. In other words, yes, I would agree. If there was something actual that occurred that would totally jeopardize the defendant's case, wouldn't it be unfair to say, well, 6 years, you're out of luck? But that's not the case. We're simply talking about cases where there is no actual prejudice, where we have to make a time presumption. And Dawley, by the way, did not make money to presumption. That is a footnote. It just notes what other courts have done. It is not the holding of the case that was left open. We're saying, and what Packard says was, the legislature's already given us.
And you're making that presumption, and you're making that the detriment to defendant's case, specifically on the merit issue of guilt or innocence. What if he were wanted to move to Florida, and he had this hanging over his head for 6 years? He moved to Florida, then you indicted him for fleeing the jurisdiction to avoid prosecution.
Well, Your Honor, first of all,
that's prejudice, but not to his underlying case.
First of all, we're blurring two things here. We're blurring pre-indictment delay, in which a Sixth Amendment case under Marion does not, those Sixth Amendment rights do not occur. This court has said that. And Luck, with a post-indictment delay. And I think that's part of the problem here. We're blurring. The scenario you gave me is one in which the events occur, he moves, and then we indict. That's pre-indictment delay.
No, post-indictment.
We indicted him and he moves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now you come back and indict him for fleeing the jurisdiction because he did it within the 6 years, but you never brought him to trial.
Well, Your Honor, again, we have to make presumptions. And again, it is not, would it be fair to make it 1 year? Why 1 year, Your Honor? Would it be fair to make it 2 years? Why 2? What we're putting the court, by not having an objective standard, what we're putting all of our trial courts in the business of doing is one of two things. We're either making them guess, and why would it move the floor to trigger anything, Your Honor? Why would it? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 1 year, 6 months?
Might not, except it might in your, in the prosecution's mind. The power of the prosecutor, I've discovered, is unbelievably broad. And that's maybe why the U.S. Supreme Court said the length of delay is to some extent the triggering mechanism.
And that is correct, and I would not argue with that. However, again, our legislature has spoken. And again, we would put our courts in the position of guessing. One particular time. I think that your question doesn't answer that. Why particular point of time? And the other thing it does, which is unfair to the defendant, if we can't guess, then it almost makes them give us a point with actual prejudice that we can say, gee, this is a point where it's too much time.
But isn't that really true? Isn't that what has to be done in these cases? That each case has to be looked upon on the facts presented. You presented a proposition of law that prejudicial delay in constitutional speedy trial cases does not occur when an action is brought within the statutory periods of limitation. Now that would appear that you are requesting us to hold that as a blanket rule.
Yes, for Sixth Amendment presumption purposes. That is correct. You are correct.
Okay.
But
so,
again, my
what are the exceptions then? You
the exception is that if there is a matter of actual prejudice. In other words, the defendant is not left without a remedy. If there's a matter of actual prejudice, that can be brought at any time.
Well, counsel, would fading memory be something that fits in the actual prejudice? No. A significant delay. I have trouble remembering what all I did yesterday.
Your Honor, how would that differ from the statute of limitations anyhow? We give 6 years. We say that in a certain amount of time, within 6 years, the case can generally be brought. How would your memory be affected any differently given those circumstances? How would that be any more unfair? The legislature said 6 years.
Well, isn't this, Mr. Keshner, isn't this case determined? The trial court here, as you know, said in light of the reason for the delay, the court finds that it's unconstitutional. The reason for the delay, of course, was, as you know, was the state argued, the prosecutor apparently argued, that this is an undercover operation and did not want to indict somebody and thereby, I guess, threaten the security or safety of the undercover officers. But then, as the trial judge says, the undercover officer became public 7 months before indictment of the defendant was made here. So that wasn't really a 7 months of, at least, of the delay really wasn't justified, was it? And that's what the trial judge based the decision, is it not? Or is that my wrong?
Partially, Your Honor, I'm at the end of my time. Let me answer this really quick.
Good answer.
That is true. And under a due process analysis, after a showing of actual prejudice, that would be a relevant concern. However, this was, and that's the problem.
He says that's the prejudice, which is, you can argue that. That's whether that's not, obviously not actual prejudice in itself, but
it's the second part of a Marion Lovato analysis under the due process clause. What happened here was that was not done. Under Marion, you have to show actual prejudice, then the state has a chance to rebut. That was not followed. What happened here, the problem in this case, is that we are dealing with a Sixth Amendment analysis, and the presumptions which are based solely, or arbitrarily based solely on the passage of time.
So you would say that for Sixth Amendment purposes, we should disregard the fact that the reason given by the state for the delay was not real. I mean, at least 7 months of it was not real.
I don't say disregard, Your Honor. I think
what do we do with it?
I think that the problem here is the procedure that the court used. I understand the concern, and it's a concern of mine too, that the state basically, following the trial court's reason, the state sat on it behind for 7 months and been doing it. That's not the argument. The argument is that the analysis was, number one, it's a pre-indictment case. There are no Sixth Amendment analyses there. Legal was misused. Number two, if you use that analysis, we don't get to the unreasonable actions of the state until after the presumption kicks in. That's the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keshner. Mr. Cicero.
This court should reject its own proposition of law and contrary to law. It asks this court to find that prejudice or delay in constitutional speedy trial cases does not occur when an action is brought within the statutory period of limitation. What this effectively does is, from what's in the discussion, I think this court really agrees, that effectively eliminates any Sixth Amendment protection for individuals in stable file other than 2945-71-173. That is not what the Supreme Court vision in Barker v. Wingo. Before I go on to address the proposition,
so, counsel, how would you calculate if we adopted the proposition of law suggested by the prosecutor? What would be the outside time limit here in this case?
In this case?
Yeah. From the transaction itself.
There would.
Until trial.
From the transaction itself until the trial.
Yeah. What's the max that could happen under that proposition of law as suggested by the prosecution?
It would be 6 years under 2901 and 2013.
6 years?
from the date of the transaction.
To trial.
To trial. Well, no, until about 2010, you would essentially be looking at...
So you'd be 6 years and 9 days?
Certainly.
If they weren't incarcerated.
Or within 2 seconds. Before I get into analysis, a deeper analysis of the proposition of law, let me make something perfectly clear right now. This is a post-indictment case as contemplated by Barker versus Wingo and as contemplated by the U.S. Post-indictment, pre-indictment are buzzwords. As made clear in Marion, Lobanzo, Loud, Hawk, McDonald, all the cases that the cite the due process, as well as in Barker versus Wingo and Doggett, the court has said that it's not an indictment, it's either an arrest, an indictment, or any other official accusation. In this case, there was no question, there was an official accusation back in June 7th, 1994.
And in what form did that take?
It was in the form of a complaint.
Filed with the court.
Public document.
And then, just let sit there for a while.
That's correct, Your Honor.
For how long?
It sat there basically in limbo until the indictment in April of 95.
So there was no action to dismiss it, no action to explain it, no action to do anything to terminate it. It sat there as a complaint saying the defendant was charged with marijuana issues.
And anybody who wanted to find that out certainly could. Any employer doing a records check, any credit branding, any school looking for admission, any bar looking for admission, that's going to be found out.
Mr. Cicero, in Barker versus Wingo, the court of course says that you don't enter into an inquiry about the four factors until you have established a length of time necessary to set up a presumption of prejudice. And if the statute of limitations adopted by the state of Ohio doesn't serve that purpose, where does the court look for, is this an ad hoc decision in every case that, okay, in this case, we presume prejudice at 2 years, and what factors are we using to do that? If it isn't the statute of limitations a fairly good place to start?
I can think of a better one, but first of all, Barker versus Wingo or Doggett more clearly states that the courts generally find that the triggering delay is as it approaches 1 year, not as it passes 1 year, as it approaches 1 year. We clearly have that in this case. In fact, we made an attempt longer. She wasn't arrested until June. That's a year from the complaint being filed, 15 months from the alleged transactions in this case. But if we are to look for some bright line, and it's clear that Barker and Doggett do not stand for any bright line, if we are to look for a triggering bright line, I think the appropriate place to look would be 2945.71. That statute, as the appellant correctly notes, Barker does solicit from the states some enforcement mechanism by statute. Clearly in Ohio, 2945.71 protects an individual's constitutional right, but only after arrest. And therefore, if we go with the statute of limitations as asserted by the prosecution, or the appellant, we eliminate, essentially, the Sixth Amendment analysis. If we go solely with 2945.71, we eliminate the constitutional analysis from the Sixth Amendment.
But that wouldn't apply here because there was no arrest, and 71 applies after arrest and confinement.
That,
number one. Number two, couldn't it also be prejudicial even during the 270-day period?
You are correct on both. What I would suggest we could use 2945.71 as is the delay from the accusation till an event done on that accusation. Once we have a complaint in this case, 270 days, 9 months, that would be much more reasonable. That statute looks at the Sixth Amendment. The statute of limitations, if it considers anything in its policy review, is looking at due process.
Would you be satisfied with that as a matter of law? Or would you just be satisfied with that because that affirms the Court of Appeals for your claim?
I think I would be satisfied with both.
Well, if you're asserting here for the basis, and you're asserting that time frame, 71.71, for a standard presumption of prejudice, and so, and as a matter of law to look for the presumption, the time presumption, right? But there's no cases that have used that statute. In fact, the express words of the statute would suggest they don't apply for the scenario of pre-arrest.
No question about it, the statute does not apply to that situation, but it would be a much better statute to look at in terms of time frame than it would be statute of limitations to set the triggering point. Clearly, 2945.71 is dealing with one Sixth Amendment speedy trial right. Statute of limitations is dealing with outer limits. I mean, we don't get to any analysis, due process, or Sixth Amendment, except in a murder case in Ohio. And to deprive everybody else who's not charged with murder of the constitutional right to speedy trial or due process,
so you looked at the text of those two statutes. I mean, the one, 7.71, of course, the text of the enactments would not apply. So, for this court to adopt a statute as a standard, where the words of the statute are absolutely inapposite, they don't apply. Do the words, and I didn't do this analysis, but does the text of the statute of limitations statute pretty much work? It says thou may not prosecute after, right?
It says that a prosecution must be commenced by a certain period of time. And clearly in this case, prosecution was commenced within the time. It was filed 3 months after the alleged event. We are told that prosecution must be commenced 6 years after the event. We're not dealing with any accusation except post-event. You understand what I'm saying? We're not, in this case, there was an accusation. And at that point, the speedy trial right is kicked in. The Sixth Amendment right kicks in.
I'm attracted to your argument to set a bright line, and the 9 month in 71 statute might be fine, but isn't it a double-edged sword? Supposing what they do is file the complaint, wait for 250 days or 60 days, then arrest, then they have 9 more months. You really want that as a standard of law?
No, I don't.
Well, that's what you argued.
I'm not arguing for it, but I'm presenting an alternative to statute of limitations.
Yeah, because you could see how that could happen.
The reverse method of the thing would be even more extreme.
Oh yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying, the 6 years. But you could really move this along to 18 months. The very thing you're complaining about that is prejudicial.
Exactly. And here we have the triggering event.
So why not go back to what Justice Resnick said? And what the Barker case says is kind of on an ad hoc basis. You decide it based on the facts of each case.
And in this case, clearly you do so clearly, you find presumptively prejudicial delay, right?
I understand, but we're talking about a rule of law now, not necessarily just this case.
I understand.
So now what is your preference? Not any longer the 9 months, certainly not 6 years. Maybe not 9 months anymore, but ad hoc basis.
My main concern here today is obviously to prevail for my client.
Sure.
Secondly, though, I would hate to see a rule of law that says 6 years as a presumptively prejudicial rule. If this court is going to do something other than that, I would hope it would be a more reasonable time.
And that's what their propositional law sets forth.
But
I know Doggett did it, but isn't there something almost contradictory in using the word presumptive, presuming prejudice at a point certain, and yet doing it on an ad hoc basis? You know, that's, I think, people immediately in the analyzing go to the four factors instead of a presumption.
It's very easy to get confused with Doggett and Barker, because there's two aspects of prejudice. The first is the triggering review. That's the way in which passes ordinary prejudice from presumptively prejudicial delay. Once that line dividing the two is crossed, then you trigger the review. And then the fourth factor is going to be the extent of prejudice that one has suffered as a result of the delay.
But I'm saying to get to the threshold presumptive before you trigger the inquiry, to do that on an ad hoc basis almost seems at odds with the notion of having a time certain for, i.e., the presumption.
And I'm not really certain how you do it, because it's strictly the time that we're talking about. And a bright line would be a very convenient thing for the courts.
And of course, the state argues, gee, we have this great little bright line already in books.
It's not the bright line that applies to the Sixth Amendment perspective. It is a bright line which would eliminate any further review, because if this is the triggering event for a Sixth Amendment analysis, there would be no Sixth Amendment analysis. Collins would like to argue, well, then you have due process. No, Ms. Selfidge has due process right now as well. She has due process and she has the Sixth Amendment. You cannot eliminate one right in favor of another. It would be a very easy approach for one which I hope this court would have to do.
Something else occurs to me as we go into that argument that I was making with you, the discussion. Their argument is that the bright line is 6 years, statute of limitations. But that would never occur in this kind of a case because the complaint was filed, so they would argue the statute was told or stopped. We brought it within that period of time. To go on for 15 years?
Well, they would have 6 years, or they would have 5 years and 3 months.
To what? Bring the...
To exercise reasonable diligence in serving this, doing anything on that complaint. That's what 2901.13 says. And...
So if they filed it and served it, but didn't do anything else?
They could sit for five, in this case, they could have sat 5 years and 9 months, as long as they were doing something to, they were exercising, no. It could have gone 7, 8 years.
That's what I'm talking
as long
about.
As they were exercising reasonable diligence to serve them.
But Doggett was 9, wasn't
he? Doggett was 8.5. And 2.5 of those years were not charged against the state that, or the federal government in that case. And the triplet decision last term used the 8.5 wording quite a bit, but Doggett said 2.5 years that guy was out of the country did not matter. It was a 6-year problem in that case. And Doggett had a triggering event, and it said as it approaches 1 year, there's the triggering event. And then it went on to consider the various factors. In that case,
finish your thought.
In that case, certain factors favor the government, others favor the defendant. In this case, various factors, once the state got past the trigger of review, does weigh highly against the state. The delay was unjustified. It's prejudicial to the defendant. Therefore, ask this court to affirm the court of appeals and the trial court.
Thank you, Mr. Cicero. Mr. Ketchmer, you've used your time, but take 30 seconds.
Your Honor, if I might, I'd like to address Justice Douglas's concerns. Your Honor, we are not talking about the facts of the case at this point. What we are discussing, and I think this is gotten worse, is a presumption where there are no facts. By its nature, we are talking about a presumption.
we are jumping way ahead to go through the facts of a case. You're dealing, first of all, the triggering mechanism in which there is no evidence other than the passage of time that's set.
Counsel, when you drag something out for 6 years, as you suggest you ought to be able to do here, shouldn't...
I don't suggest that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, but shouldn't the burden then be on the state to carry the ball and to show there's no harm instead of throwing the burden over on...
No, it should not, Your Honor, because the burden is on the defendant to show. Again, another thing that I would like to address is the fact that there is a remedy. It is the due process remedy, and as Mr. Cicero states, that's available at any time. If there is actual prejudice, and all we need is some showing of that, then the burden goes back on the state. We already have the mechanism you're talking about.
You want to blow off what, you know, the fact that it's difficult to remember. Well, that's key to a defense. When you're accused of something, remember who was there, who was around.
I'm not blowing that off. What I'm saying is that if
we don't remember that 6 years later,
we presume a loss of memory. Because again, we are talking about presumptions. We are not talking about evidence. We are talking about presumptions. If we presume a lack of memory, the memories that we effectively eliminated the Sixth Amendment analysis, as Mr. Cicero says, because we are presuming. And that's what the state is arguing. We are making a presumption without evidence. There is no evidence. We are making a presumption without evidence. And it cuts both ways. What you're saying, Your Honor, with all due respect, is let's presume that this person's memory will fade. And the statute of limitations has already said, we know when that happens. 6 years. I'm sorry.
But certainly the fading of memories is a big part of the reason for the Sixth Amendment. It's to guard against prejudice to the defense as well as the impairment of liberty.
And prejudice against the prosecution. That's quite correct.
Right.
That's quite correct. But again, we're dealing with a presumption. And I would again ask this court, what is the difference between presuming for proper purposes and presuming in the nature of statutes of limitations when the state would bring a case that the memories are any different? It's the same question. It's been contemplated before. And Your Honor, just one last thing, I'll sit down.
Yeah, very quickly.
We're not talking about filing and then waiting 6 years. We are talking about from the date of the event to the end of the 6 year period. We're not talking about filing has nothing to do with this. We're talking about a presumption of time, just a temporal presumption. So we're going actually from the date of the event, not even the arrest, Your Honor. We're going from even an earlier date. So if you can't extend this time, it's not extendable by any actions of anybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cashmere. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.